Hey everyone, this is Graham from Guru Focus. If you haven't met me already, I run our Value Investing Live series on YouTube. The podcast you're about to listen to was originally recorded live in front of an audience, so our guests may make references to charts and PowerPoint slides that you won't be able to see here. If you want to check out their full presentation, including those slides, or join our next live stream, click on the link down in the description. Now back to the podcast. All right. Welcome, everyone, to Value Investing Live. Today, I'm pleased to welcome our guest, Jonathan Boyer. Jonathan is president of Boyer Intrinsic Value Research, an independent research boutique established in 1975 that counts some of the world's largest sovereign wealth funds, hedge funds, mutual funds, and family offices as subscribers. He is also a principal of the investment manager, which has been managing money, utilizing a value-oriented strategy since 1983. Mark Boyer started publishing independent equity research on intrinsically undervalued companies in 1975, which led to the establishment of Boyer Asset Management in 1983. Defining intrinsic value as the amount paid to stockholders if a business is liquidated or sold, Boyer Asset Management remains true to Mark's vision by specializing in equity securities of intrinsically undervalued companies. Their analysis of financial statements is driven by economic reality, and clients see profits as the markets reflect true value. As always, to all of our viewers out there, please feel free to post your questions and comments in the chat throughout the presentation, but keep in mind we will hold all of them until we hit the Q&A there at the end. And without further ado, I'll go ahead and hand things over to Jonathan so he can begin his presentation.
Thank you, Graham. Much appreciated, and thank you to yourself and Charlie for inviting me. It's always an honor. I know I spoke a few years ago at the Guru Focus conference, and I was supposed to speak this year live, but obviously that got derailed due to the coronavirus. But I truly hope to be there next year when things hopefully get back to some semblance of normalcy. So I guess let's start the title of my presentation, The Dolan Discount, Opportunity or Value Trap, Plus Other Opportunities. So I guess before starting, this presentation can be downloaded by going to the website address on the bottom left-hand of the screen. We'll also be posting, you always can follow us on Twitter at Boyer Value. So in today's presentation, I'm really going to do three things. One, give a brief background on the Boyer Value Group. Two, discuss how we identify intrinsically undervalued companies. And then talk about two Dolan-controlled entities that, in our opinion, are selling at significant discounts to our estimate of intrinsic value, as well as two other companies that are household names that we currently find attractive. So here's the, for the lawyers, full disclosure, both myself and my clients own shares in all the companies I'm going to present today. I don't think you would want it any other way. So who is the Boyer Value Group? This is a family-run firm. It was founded by my father, Mark, in 1975 to really be a research boutique looking at intrinsic companies through a different lens. What would a knowledgeable acquirer pay for the business as opposed to what is a given company going to earn next quarter or next year? And we've morphed into really two businesses. We have a research division where we sell our research on a subscription basis. We also have a money management division where we manage money for both individuals and institutions, large insurance companies, all sorts of different vehicles, utilizing this really in-depth research. So there's kind of two hot sides of the house that are related. So first, Boyer Research. As Graham mentioned earlier, we have a institutional research service. We have some very interesting clients. I would say some of the world's leading investors are clients of ours, and it's something we're quite proud of. And we think, quite frankly, this makes us better investors. And then we, as I said earlier, utilize these ideas for our Boyer Asset Management clients, that include family offices, large institutions, and manage money through both pooled investment vehicles and separately managed accounts. So that's just a brief background on the organization, but what about the approach? How do we invest money and how are we different? I think we're quite unique. You know, we consider ourselves businessmen trying to buy the proverbial dollar for 50 cents. You know, we look at every company through the lens of an acquirer. You know, my father has instilled in this into me since I was a little kid that, you know, and I've lived with this my whole life. If a company's share price sells at a significant discount to what it's worth over a reasonable period of time, and I emphasize reasonable, the stock market will either reflect the true value of the company or an acquirer will. So that's why we look at everything through that lens, because we think it's very, very helpful. And it's different than what traditional Wall Street does, where they just slap a multiple on a name. So we essentially take a private equity approach to public market investing. So people ask me, you know, how do we come up with our stock ideas? You know, we have a variety of ways that we uncover value, which I'll go over briefly in a moment. I'll just go through each of these quickly. You know, the business value approach is one method. You know, Wall Street has a way of making industries, you know, the flavor of the day, making stocks in that industry soar to ridiculously high heights. And then as high as they get just as low. And that's where we get involved. We, you know, Wall Street, you know, will sell indiscriminately if a company is associated with a given industry. So what we do is we look for industries that are out of favor that we think have long-term potential to avoid value traps, and look at the companies with the most competitive advantages, the best balance sheets. And for valuation purposes, what have similar companies been acquired for in the recent past? So that's one method. The hidden asset approach is probably my favorite method, and one that we do utilize. And one of the reasons I like it so much is no computer screen in the world can replicate what we are doing. The only way to do this is just through rolling up your sleeves and doing your own due diligence. So what the hidden asset method is accounting rules require the depreciation of certain assets that in fact often increase in value over time. So this leads to, you know, companies selling for significantly below than what they're worth. And the best way to illustrate this is by an example. And I've heard this story 1,000 times by my father. This was the first stock or one of the first stocks we ever profiled in our research service, Tiffany & Company. So in 1975, when we started, you could have bought the entire Tiffany franchise for $24 million. The building it owned on 57th Street and 5th Avenue, even during the depressed 1970s, was worth significantly more than $24 million. So you were essentially getting the business at less than zero cost. But the balance sheet couldn't reflect this, and the stock price languished. And we knew over time, if we could stay the course, we would be fine, and value would realize. And a few years later, Avon, which at the time was a high flyer, came in and paid a very handsome price for the company. So that's just a brief overview of the hidden asset method. The franchise approach is another area. We love great consumer franchises, especially when they're masked by a corporate name. You know, believe it or not, this leads to valuation discrepancy, because when you have a corporate name, people just put it kind of in the too hard category or just ignore it. And the best example is one that we've recently, or last year or two, profiled. It's done quite well. We bought for clients, called Acushnet. And probably half of you have no idea what Acushnet does, because it's just so a corporate name, but they own Titleist golf balls and FootJoy golf clubs. And you have to look at things through the lens of a portfolio manager. They see Acushnet go across their screen and they kind of might ignore it. But if the name of the company was Titleist or whatever, it, you know, the valuation discrepancy might tighten. So this seems very simplistic, but believe it or not, it works. Fallen angels are another area that we like looking at. We like looking at the once darlings of Wall Street that are now unwanted and unloved. Just like in the business value method, Wall Street has a way of, you know, making stocks go to dizzying heights and then having them fall to levels that are just ridiculous. What we do is when that happens, we look at the business. We look, is this a sustainable business? Is this a value trap? Is there something behind it? And if it is, it's something that we might profile and eventually buy for clients. We also like looking at special situations. Spinoffs have been a fertile hunting ground for us. We like looking at companies post-bankruptcy, as you can usually get things on the cheap that way. But not all spinoffs are created equal. You have to be very, very careful and figure out why is a company spinning off a division. We actually, a year or so ago, did a comprehensive report discussing, you know, why spinoffs over the last 10 years or so have significantly underperformed the market. But if you looked at certain factors, you could find success, potentially successful spinoffs. So our methodology, you know, the business value method, fallen angels, you know, special situations, you know, that's just the starting point. Equally important is a catalyst or a trigger. You know, if a stock is simply just cheap, it can stay that way for a long time. You know, that's why you need to find a catalyst. Otherwise, you're going to fall into that value trap, which is what so many value investors make that mistake. So every time we come up with an idea, we have to come up with a story, a reason. Why is that stock going to go up over a reasonable period of time? You know, Barron's once called my father, Mark, the world's most patient investor. Yeah, I might not be as patient as him, but I'm pretty close. And we're willing to wait, you know, 2, 3, 4 years for our thesis to pan out, which I think gives us a competitive advantage. So what are our other competitive advantages? You know, there's a lot of money management firms out there. There's a lot of research boutiques. You know, what makes us different? I think the most important is our proprietary research publications. We sell for a lot of money to institutions, high net worth individuals, et cetera. Comprehensive research reports, really, really deep dives that get sent to some, in my opinion, some of the world's best investors. And they're not afraid to tell us when we're wrong or to push back on our theories or our thesis. And that back and forth, I think, really helps us. Also, having to constantly come up with new ideas for our subscribers is really helpful. You know, a lot of money managers run into the, you know, trap of just recycling their old ideas. Because we're paid to come up with new ideas, we have to be fresh. We have to be on top of our game and constantly come up with these new names. Another competitive advantage for us is we invest in areas of the market that, you know, are underfollowed, in industries that are out of favor. And we think these in microcap stocks. And we have a separate microcap service called Boyer's Microcap Focus, which has been extremely successful. We believe these overlooked areas of the market offer the greatest opportunities for outsized long-term returns. Things will be lumpy, of course. You know, value investing certainly is currently out of favor, but we think over the long period of time, this is a sound investment strategy. You know, we stood the test of time. You know, my father started the business in the late 60s, started our firm in 1975. He's still very much involved in the day-to-day operations of our business. And, you know, we've gone through terrible periods of time and persevered and survived and came out stronger on top. And we see no reason why this time will be different. And we've established a terrific team of seasoned analysts, investment professionals that have a diverse background, diverse skill sets, And I think one of the things that makes us different is we're all generalists. We're all free to come up with ideas regardless of market cap, regardless of sector. And I think that gives us another competitive advantage, because sometimes there's reasons to completely ignore a sector. And if you're an energy analyst at a particular firm and there's nothing to buy in energy, you're just trying to justify your existence. Here, our employees, our team members are free to come up with any idea, any market cap, any sector. And we've done quite well by our research clients, which, you know, translates to our, you know, many of the ideas we buy for our money management clients. As you can see, I don't want to toot our own horn, but we've done quite well, both on the Boyer microcap focus and our traditional all-cap product asset analysis focus. You know, obviously, past performance is no guarantee of future results, you know, as our lawyers make us say, but it's, you know, this is how we've done. So now I'm just going to start talking about stock ideas. As I mentioned, I'm going to talk about the MSGE, MSGS complex, and then talk about two other ideas that are more household names. Anyone who's a Knicks fan must think I'm crazy to want to invest in this company. They're controlled by the Dolan family. Yeah. However, we have a very different view of the Dolans than most people. We've actually found them to be great people to invest alongside with. You know, we've been following them a long time as we were shareholders in Cablevision. And the Dolans tried to take the Cablevision private in mid-2000s, but the minority shareholders blocked them. And thankfully they did, as since then, the Dolans unlocked a lot of value for shareholders. And one of the things that they did was spin out Madison Square Garden. And because of the valuation and the great assets that they own, we decided to feature it in our February 2010 issue of our all-cap research service. At the time of the spinoff, MSG was, you know, had a lot of issues that were worrying investors, not too similar today. You know, they, Knicks were terrible, same as today. Then there was the possibility of an NBA strike. And people were worried about heavy capital expenditures as they were upgrading the company's flagship arena, Madison Square Garden. So there were lots of worries, and it was greeted with skepticism, and that's what gave us the opportunity as we saw fantastic assets. And as I mentioned before, you know, Wall Street, you know, doesn't particularly like the Dolans, and they've been terrible if you're a Knick or a Ranger fan. But as a shareholder, we've been quite happy with them. You know, when they controlled Cablevision, they had an industry-leading dividend, paid a large special dividend, and they eventually ended up selling Cablevision to Altice at a price we never thought they would get. So that also demonstrates to us that they're willing to part with assets. And we think one or both of MSGE and MSGS could potentially be sold. The value of sports teams have exploded. If you can see, the value of the Knicks in 2009 compared to today, and the Rangers have gone up significantly over time. And that's for a variety of reasons, doing with the value of sports media rights and now sports gambling, which is a huge opportunity for them. So that's part of the valuation. And I know it sounds strange to use the Forbes value, but that's actually utilized quite heavily during sports transactions. So here's the current opportunity. In April of this year, Madison Square Garden was separated into two companies, Madison Square Garden Sports and MSG Entertainment, both of which, in our opinion, are trading significantly less than our estimate of their intrinsic value. The Dolans control both entities through super voting shares, and while many people are hesitant to go into dual class shares, we think if you have the right partner, it's something you can live with, or we can live with, And oftentimes it gets you the opportunity to buy shares cheaply. So what is Madison Square Garden Entertainment? It owns the world's most famous arena and other iconic venues. It has a really large cash position, valuable air development rights. That was an example of a hidden asset, as those are not properly reflected on the balance sheet. And it's also in the process of building the Sphere. So what is the Sphere? And this is besides obviously COVID, because this is an entertainment company, the Sphere is what's really weighing on shares of the company. The Sphere is the venue of the future, which is going to be built in Las Vegas and most likely London. The building is going to be about 366 feet tall by 560 feet wide, and we'll have the world's LED screen. Look it up on Google. It's really cool. The concept's terrific. I have no doubt that this will be a really cool arena if they're able to execute. What gives us pause is the price tag. At $1.6 billion, that's a very expensive proposition relative to the size of the company. In our opinion, they already have a great business. Why mess with a good thing? So despite the obvious near-term headwinds created by Corona, we're quite bullish on live entertainment. This is an area that has grown nicely, and we think when the world gets back to normal, we think it'll grow quite meaningfully. There's a lot of pent-up demand. If you look at the company like Live Nation, you see that most of their tickets that they sold pre-pandemic haven't been refunded. People are just holding them. For the future, I think once the world gets back to back to where it was, these venues will be eventually utilized quite nicely. And we believe there are multiple ways for shareholders to unlock value. MSG has a large cash balance. It has a $350 million share repurchase program. Remember, the entire enterprise value of the company is roughly $500 million. They have valuable air rights that they could monetize. And we don't think James Dolan likes being a public company. And we would not be surprised if he took the company private. It's worth noting that Silver Lake, the private equity firm that is also in the live event space in a pretty big way, is an 8% holder of the company. Perhaps they partner on something in the future. Obviously, that's speculation, but it wouldn't surprise us. So here's our valuation and how we got there. Current share price, I think, is roughly $68 and change. I discussed the risks, which are coronavirus, but most importantly, the uncertainty over Las Vegas. And because of what's going on in Las Vegas and the risk there, we took about a 50% haircut to their cash balance. Over here, I encourage you to go to this. You can just Google Jonathan Boyer, Forbes, Dolan. It's an open letter I wrote to James Dolan discussing why our firm thinks the Sphere is a bad idea. Maybe he'll listen to me, but probably not. The next company, Madison Square Garden Sports. Right now, you can buy the Knicks and the Rangers for essentially $3.5 billion. You're basically at these levels getting, buying the Knicks and essentially getting the Rangers for free. Plus, you have a decent cash hoard. They have, esports franchises and other investments. I think they're going to be a big beneficiary on online gambling. Because of coronavirus, everyone's state budget is extremely stretched. And I think legalized sports gambling is just going to continue to flourish. And I think the NBA and MSG will all profit from this, and as shareholders, we would as well. It's also interesting, and this is what we really look at, and we try to get in the heads of of the people doing these transactions, that Madison Square Garden Sports was structured as the parent. This, from our understanding of the law, allows the company to be sold at pretty much any time without losing the tax-free nature of the spinoff. So right now you have two entities, Madison Square Garden Entertainment, Madison Square Garden Sports. And I think if the Knicks or Rangers or both ever were put on sale, there would be a line of billionaires, you know, around the block wanting to buy these things. And, you know, I think, you know, it's in our opinion, it's kind of a question of time, whether it's 1 year, 2 year, 3 years. I don't think James Dolan wants to own the Knicks and the Rangers over the long run. Sports franchises have gone up dramatically. He's made a lot of money. He bought the Knicks for next to nothing, but he's getting nothing but grief for owning these teams. And I think at some point he's going to want to just end it. As I mentioned earlier, the sports rights have gone up in value really for two reasons. One, mobile gambling, and two, live entertainment. Besides news, live sports is the only other place that, you know, people watch live. And the value of sports teams has continued to increase. And there was a transaction just recently. Look at Steve Cohen. He paid well over $2 billion. I think it was $2.5 billion for the Mets, which was a mediocre team. And that's baseball, when the team valuation for baseball are significantly less than that for basketball. And it just shows that when these trophy assets come up for sale, there will be buyers. And I see no reason why the same thing won't happen for the Knicks and or Rangers. And, you know, here's how we got to our valuation for Madison Square Garden Sports. Again, at the end, it'll have a link on where you can get the you can get the presentation. So that's the MSGE, MSGS saga. Please feel free to email me with any questions later. The next company is a name that everyone knows. It's certainly a high quality name that we think is very interesting, and Wall Street really hasn't given it the credit it's deserved. We came up with this idea in a recent issue of our research service and decided it was attractive enough to purchase for, you know, certain clients. As you know, Coke's the largest non-alcoholic beverage company in the world. You know, amazingly, their products represent 2 billion of the 61 billion beverages served globally. And it switched its strategy in multiple ways over the past decade. It bought and then refranchised its bottlers, and it took the company from an asset-heavy business to an asset-light business. And this shift really helped with margins. But much of this improvement has been masked by the strong U.S. dollar, as most of their costs, their headquarters in Atlanta, are in dollars. But, you know, they're a global company, and their revenue is obviously many, many different currencies. And as you are well aware, the world is shifting away from sugary drinks. So now they're selling healthier beverages. And for their unhealthy beverages, they're kind of more packaging them as a treat into smaller packaging, which has helped increase margins substantially. And believe it or not, even with shrinking the packaging, they've been able to grow volumes every year by 2.8% for the last 14 years, which is pretty amazing when you consider the headwinds facing that business in terms of sugary, being against sugary snacks, etc. Coronavirus is obviously impacting sales for Coke, but we think Wall Street's overreacting, and much of these sales will come back. And we think the operational improvements warrant a re-rating of shares. And believe, you know, they're selling about $49 today. We think they're worth probably $66 per share, which would be 45% upside when you include dividends. But even if the multiple stays the same, we still see 30% upside when you factor in dividends. While the stock certainly is cheaper, we think it could get cheaper. We think at current levels, it offers a very compelling risk reward. So the next company I'm going to discuss is another company you are all very familiar with, Disney. You know, my father always discussed how powerful the Disney brand was from an investment standpoint. But until I had children of my own and started to have to pay for all the Disney paraphernalia and trips, etc., I really had no idea what he was saying. Now I do. And, you know, Disney controls some of the world's best properties, from Marvel to Star Wars to ESPN, and of course, Mickey, Minnie, and Goofy. You know, Disney has obviously been impacted due to the virus, but they have the balance sheet to withstand the shutdown of their business for a long time. We don't think their overall long-term business is going to change. You know, and prior to COVID, the box office performance was absolutely fantastic. They also bought Fox, bringing over to them even more fantastic franchises like National Geographic and X-Men, Fantastic Four, lots of Avatar. You know, you name it, they brought it over. It was terrific. But what we're most excited about is Disney Plus. It's, you know, I have two young children. It's the best $6.99 I spend. And this is, in one way, has been, you know, COVID has actually helped them with this. They had thought that they were going to get 60 to 90 million subs for Disney Plus by 2024. We're obviously still in 2020, and they've already, less than a year after release, already have 60 million subscribers. This is much faster than Netflix got to that number, significantly. And we think this is a huge growth engine for the company. So, using a sum of the parts valuation, we get to $183 per share. I think over time this could prove to be conservative, as I think the Disney streaming service is quite powerful. And if you compare it to the value of Netflix, either Netflix is extremely overvalued or Disney is extremely undervalued, or probably somewhere in between. Well, I want to thank Charlie and the rest of Guru Focus for inviting me to participate. I hope to be able to join you soon in person, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have. I'll leave it open for questions. And just to let you know, if you want a copy of this presentation, you know, please go here. We'll have one sent to you. Feel free to follow us on Twitter. One of the things I forgot to mention is I have a podcast that I'm very proud of called The World According to Boyer. It's something that you could listen to for free via iTunes. Thank you.
All righty. Well, thank you, Jonathan, for that amazing presentation. We'll go ahead and jump into some questions here. We do have a decent amount built up over on YouTube. First and foremost, would you mind giving us an example of a recent special situation that you've been involved in after mentioning those in the presentation?
Yeah, I would be happy to. And special situations are really interesting, and sometimes they can be quite frustrating, and you question yourself. But the one that comes to mind that happened recently has to do with Qurate, which is a stock we've been following for quite some time. They own Home Shopping Network and QVC. It's controlled by John Malone. And John Malone, you know, is a good guy to invest alongside, but he does some kind of crazy thing, convoluted structures, etc. And one of the things he did was recently he spun off to existing equity shareholders a preferred yielding 8%. The symbol, I think, is QRTEP. It's 8% through 2031. And it originally came out at $105 and quickly got down to the high 80s. And the reason for that, and that gives you over a 9% yield when their comparable bonds were yielding 7.5%. And I think the reason for that is, if you look at their shareholder base, their index funds or other companies that just couldn't own the preferred So they sold them indiscriminately. And that's where active managers like myself can really take advantage of these situations. And that's what we did. So it just, to me, just didn't make sense. You know, it quickly went from 88. I think now it's back to 98. So you're still below par. They can't call it, I believe, for 5 years. So I think it's an attractive security in this low rate world.
Gotcha. So we'll go ahead and jump into these YouTube questions now. First one that we have sitting here waiting for us. What would you say is the best way to value a highly growing company?
That's a really good question. I mean, a lot of the businesses that we look at are more mature. So I don't think that's, you know, we're value investors. Obviously, you want to have growth. That's ideal. But that's really not our area of expertise. But the times that we buy kind of higher multiple businesses, like when we did PayPal or Angie, we look for companies with great network effects that are things that are very hard to replicate, that are unique. So we stay away from the high flyers, and that's been to our detriment over the last decade or so. So the rapidly growing companies usually have too high of a multiple to get us interested in them.
Gotcha. And Ben Graham described the market to be a bipolar person. Do you think it can still be described that way, or do you think it's much more informed than it used to be?
That's a really great question. There's clearly more information than when my father started the business in 1975, where the the big technology was having a calculator. Today, everyone has Bloomberg, FactSet, a lot of data at your fingertips. But these things still aren't going to come up with these Madison Square Gardens, which are not statistically cheap. They're not going to see that Tiffany building that's understated on the balance sheet. So while things have gotten harder, just with more information for active managers, there's still opportunities. There's for selling things that you can take advantage of. But, you know, Wall Street, you know, I think people still are, you know, the fundamental human condition of being greedy and trying to, you know, make money quickly has not changed. And that's something investors can take advantage of. And you want, you know, as Buffett says, you don't need to swing at every pitch. And you can just come up with, you know, buy things at your own schedule.
Definitely. And you mentioned that anyone within the company has the opportunity to bring any industry or any idea to the table. Are there any industries at all that you think your company's methodology would not work for?
Yes. I guess I'll answer that in two ways. I don't think biotech is an area that we would be particularly good at using this methodology, because it's generally a binary result. It's either the drug works or it doesn't. There's no kind of in between. We also tend to stay away from energy type plays, and that's, you know, while it's hasn't been good that we've avoided technology, although we do own, you know, we've owned Microsoft since 2007, done quite well on it. Not having energy has helped us, because we don't think those are good businesses to own for the long term. So I think biotech, heavy, fast growing technology type companies, although we will buy old tech, probably doesn't work as well. But everything else, you know, we like brands, we like great consumer franchises, we like things that you can touch, feel, and value, or banks, large money center banks that, you know, have huge technological competitive advantages and are going to do well in a rising interest rate environment whenever that occurs. So there are plenty of sectors for us to choose from, but there are a few that we do avoid.
Gotcha. And do you have any thoughts within natural resources, particularly looking at ExxonMobil or Chevron offering good value at current prices?
Yeah, we stay away from energy, and I guess I would tell you the reason why. Most of those companies, the only way that they're going to do well is if the price of oil is at a certain, you know, certain price. I don't know what the break-even point is for those companies. That's something that's totally out of our control. So if we look at every company the way an acquirer would. I don't want to own an entire business whose profitability is dependent on a variable I have absolutely no control over. So we tend to avoid them. Yeah, listen, energy is, I think, gone from 20% of the S&P 500 to 2% roughly. So maybe there's some value there, but I don't think these are great long-term plays.
Definitely. And thanks for that clarification. And a question here that we do have actually repeated, how do you recognize a value trap?
That's a great question. I think you have to look for the catalyst that helps you avoid the value traps. I mean, how do you recognize it? I mean, I think you just have to look at the business. I mean, if you look at the business and say, hey, if I could buy this whole business in its entirety, would I want to own it with my clients or my own money? It's kind of a way of doing it. That's why we don't want, you know, you mentioned Ben Graham before. We don't want the cigar butt type of investments that are good for one more puff. They're terribly tax inefficient, and I think a lot of through technology, a lot of that has been weeded out. So we're very, very cognizant of value traps. Just because a stock hasn't gone up doesn't mean it's a value trap. But there has to be a reason why we think you have to continually evaluate your thesis and see, you know, let's say the stock has languished for 2 or 3 years. Has anything changed? Are we missing something? You know, things such as that. So you have to really keep looking at your thesis and constantly reevaluating it.
Definitely. And looks like we have another question here regarding a recent purchase of IBM. And our question here is just wondering about your thoughts on the value and your margin of safety when looking at that company.
I think, you know, we had an advisor join us who owned IBM. I believe, yeah, I did not purchase it, so I don't really have. Or we own it in very small amounts. So it certainly would not be one of our favorite ideas at this point right now. So I don't really have anything intelligent to say on IBM.
Definitely. And looks like, well, for this question, it looks like we already, for the most part, hit on kind of your thoughts on pharmaceutical and biotech companies as them working or not working. Generally, well, the question is asking, since the majority of them are undervalued, any thoughts, particularly something like Biogen?
Yeah, no, I would put like the big pharma in a different category. I'd say biotech, I'm talking about the one-trick ponies that have, you know, one or two drugs in the pipeline. Either you're going to get 40 times your money or lose everything. But Pfizer at these levels, Merck at these levels, you know, we recently wrote up Merck. Those are interesting. They're great franchises. You know, Merck is, you know, everyone's worried, and they're always worried that, you know, they're not going to come up with a new drug to replace, you know, their one of their drugs that are going off patent. But they always seem to be able to buy their way out of this problem. Plus, these companies tend not to do well during, you know, prior to an election. Because there's always talk of reforming healthcare. But, you know, I would say Pfizer and Merck seem to be interesting. And Pfizer, towards the end of the year, I believe, are doing some corporate actions to help unlock value as well.
Definitely. And why do you use EBITDA rather than free cash flow?
Because, I mean, that's how we always do. We feel like that's how an acquirer would do it. We also do look at at free cash flow. EBITDA is important to us, but you know, we look at free cash flow. We also look at earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. I think it depends on the different situation.
Definitely. And it looks like we have a question here just asking a little bit more about the normalized earning power of MSGS and, in your opinion, what a return of capital might look like.
Yeah, I mean, they've positioned it as a return of capital vehicle. Normalized, it's hard to tell because I really have a strong belief that sports gambling is going to come into fruition. That's going to help. Certainly, but it's also, this is something you're valuing on an asset. This is a trophy asset. I think it's one of their 30 NBA franchises, 31 NHL, I think, from memory. These things don't come up for sale very often, especially in the biggest media market in the world. So you have to look, someone's going to pay a lot of money for this, if and when they come up for sale. So these things are never going to screen cheaply, but I think someone's always going to want to buy it. Look, we're in the middle of a coronavirus pandemic, and Steve Cohen paid well over $2 billion to buy a mediocre baseball team in New York. Basketball teams traditionally traded much higher, and you know, Forbes values the Knicks at well over $4 billion, and the enterprise value of MSGS right now is $3.5 billion. And, you know, so you're getting the Rangers for free and then some.
Definitely. And on that note, just out of curiosity, do you see any other teams kind of making big market moves at any time in the future?
Well, the only other publicly traded team that we follow would be Liberty Braves, which I think is also quite interesting. That's a John Malone-controlled entity. It's a... we think it's worth in the high 30s, I believe. It's in the low 20s. I think the enterprise value of the company is $1.2 billion. If you look at the Mets go for $2.5 billion, and the $1.2 billion also includes a real estate development. Enterprise value might be a little bit more, but there's also a valuable real estate development there. I don't think this is a long-term hold for John Malone. I think at some point in time he sells the team as well.
Definitely. Well, it looks like that is going to, for the most part, wrap up the questions that we have over in the live chat currently. We'll keep things open here for a little bit longer while we do our closing, but any final thoughts, anything like that that you'd like to put out there before we go ahead and close things out here?
No, I just want to thank you and Charlie for having me here. As you know, if anyone wants to download the report, you can see here. And if you have any questions, feel free to get in touch with me. I hope I answered your questions, and people who didn't want to answer offline, you know, just figure out how to get in touch with me. And thank you again for having me.
Definitely. And thank you for the great presentation and for taking the time to answer these questions. Our audience really does appreciate having guests on here that they can interact with and truly get involved.
So they were great questions. Wish I could do it in person, hopefully next year.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to this episode of Value Investing Live. If you haven't joined one of our live streams before, check us out on YouTube and register for the events on gurufocus.com. If it's your first time hearing of us, click the link in the bio for a free 7-day trial of Guru Focus, where you can test out all of our great tools and features. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.